This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here to talk about the role that information can play to help universities, funding bodies, and government achieve their desired research outcomes. First, today I'm going to explain the perspective that Elsevier has on the global research landscape. Secondly, I'm going to describe the UK's position in that landscape, drawing upon some data and from some analyses that we've recently done. So you'll hear some overlap with what we just heard there from Paul. And finally, I want to give some examples of how UK universities are increasingly using data and tools to help them sustain and advance their position, given the increasingly stiff international competition. Elsevier's perspective on the research landscape is to a large extent informed by Scopus, which is the world's largest database of peer-reviewed research literature, conference papers, and patents. It indexes over 18,000 peer-reviewed journals from more than 5,000 global publishers, and adds 30 million new citations per year. That's 80,000 new citations a day. Like any data source, of course, it has its limitations. And while we've made significant investments to increase our coverage of journals in the arts and humanities, Scopus does not yet cover books and monographs that are the primary outputs in these fields, nor the other forms of outputs that we've heard about from science, from the humanities. And while publications and citations, as the session before lunch debated, are widely recognized indicators of productivity, they are but proxies for the intensity and impact of research. They are really complementary, not substitutes, for judgment of the impact of research. Nevertheless, Scopus is increasingly being used to support national research assessment exercises. For example, the Australian Research Council is using it as the sole source of citation data to support the Excellence in Research for Australia, ERA, assessment in 2012. HEFCE recently announced that it will be using Scopus data exclusively to support the REF in 2014. Scopus is also the exclusive bibliometric data source of studies to inform science policy, such as BIS's forthcoming report, which will be coming out on October 19th, to assess the UK's comparative research performance. And finally, the Royal Society's Knowledge Networks and Nations report analysed patterns of networks and international collaboration also used Scopus data. Analysis of this data and of many other sources, such as from OECD and from WIPO, shows that research is a global growth industry. Governments, universities, corporations, and charities continue to invest in research to drive economic growth and to address the pressing global challenges of our time, such as energy, climate change, food and water security, and aging populations. As a result, global R&D spending grew by 6% a year since 1996, holding steady at around 2% of GDP. R&D expenditures are expected to reach $1.2 trillion in 2011. That's an increase of 4% since 2010. The UK spent $32 billion on R&D in 2010. That's a 3% share of the world's total and 1.8% of GDP in 2010. However, the UK spending grew by just 0.8% per year since 2006, below the G8 average of 2.4 and below the OECD average of 2.7. The other key research input other than funding is number of researchers. There were around 6 million researchers in the world in 2009, a number that grew roughly by 1% per year since 2005. The UK has 250,000 researchers in 2009. That's a 4% share of the world's total. But the number of UK researchers grew by just 0.75% per year since 2005, below the G8 of 0.9%, below the OECD average of 1.15%. The steady growth in funding and researcher inputs drives steady growth in the volume of research outputs. So globally, researchers published around 1.9 million articles in 2010. That's an average annual growth of 4% per year since 2006. UK researchers published 124,000 articles. That's 6% of the world total, an average annual growth of 2.9%. Those articles that were published generated 32 million citations globally in 2010, and that number grew on average by 6% a year. UK articles published since 2006 generated 3.5 million. That's 11% of the world's total. And that number grew slightly higher at 7% a year since 2006. And as we've seen from Paul, even more impressively, UK authored articles accounted for 14% of the most cited 1% of articles in the world. So, relative to its inputs, the UK punches well above its weight. again reinforcing messages that Paul has made. The numbers are slightly different because the sources are slightly different and slightly refreshed. It accounts for, but the message is fundamentally the same. It accounts for 3% of R&D spending, 4% of researchers, generates 6% of articles, 10% of citations, and 14% of the world's most highly cited articles. In terms of efficiency, of the top five research nations in R&D spending, that's the US, it's China, the UK, Japan, and Germany, UK researchers generate more articles per researcher and the most citations per researcher. The UK is the world leader in terms of citations per unit spend on R&D. By international standards, therefore, the UK is doing very well, especially relative to its size. However, the question is, how long can the UK sustain it and let alone advance its position, especially given the growth in R&D expenditures and in the number of researchers that are below the G8 and global averages? Let me contrast for a moment with China, which we've heard a lot about this morning. China spent $1.4 billion on R&D in 2010. That's 4.5 times more than the UK. The number of researchers in China is 1.2 million. That's 5 times the UK. China increased its R&D spending by 18% a year from 2006 to 2010. That's 22 times faster than the UK over the last 5 years. While the UK's share of R&D funding fell from 3.7% to 3% since 2006, China's increased from 9% to 13%, overtaking Japan to become the second largest R&D spender in the world after the US. The growth in Chinese funding and researcher inputs is driving growth in Chinese outputs. China is already second only to the US in terms of number of articles published. Its output grew by 14% per year since 2006, 3.5 times the global average, and as such, China is expected to become the world's largest, the most prolific nation by 2020, if not sooner. And while in terms of quality, citations per article is low, citations to Chinese-authored articles published since 2006 grew by 27%. That's more than 4 times the rate of the UK's growth. Now, while no other nation is as impressive as China in terms of the scale and rate of its growth in inputs and outputs, other countries are also investing heavily with significant implications for research. For example, the number of articles published by Indian researchers grew by 12% a year since 2006. The number of Brazilian articles grew by 10% a year since 2006. India and Brazil together publish almost as many articles now as the UK. The research landscape is therefore experiencing tectonic shifts in the global balance of power, creating new peaks and new troughs. Established leaders such as the UK, the US, Japan, and Germany are being challenged by countries like China, India, and Brazil, who are investing heavily in R&D and who have large and rapidly growing researcher populations, which in turn are giving them rapidly expanding shares of global research outputs. And as if these tectonic shifts are not enough of a challenge, the UK universities are also facing something of an earthquake at home, not least as they grapple with post-Brown Review changes in student funding. The flat cash settlement for research, which we've heard about this morning quite a lot, in 2010 was certainly a victory for UK research, given the prospect of 15% or more cuts in the context of the Comprehensive Spending Review. But it remains a victory over what could have been. Flat doesn't sound so good relative to the actual spending growth among other leading research nations. 3% in Germany, 6% in Japan, 6% in the US, 18% in China. So how can UK universities sustain and advance their positions in the face of these intensely competitive dynamics? I'm going to use the remaining time to discuss 4 levers that institutions are applying using examples from UK universities as I do so. This chart shows the inputs, throughputs, and outputs that define an institution's research activities and the levers that relate to them. The first lever is to improve the institution's funding win rate. This could mean winning more funds from national sources, from international sources, or from institutional block grants, such as the REF in 2014, or via researchers' competitive bids for grants. The second lever is to attract the best researchers, both from the UK and beyond, whether early career researchers or established researchers. The third lever is to improve the efficiency of the research process to which funding and human capital inputs are then applied, One mechanism that we also heard about from Paul that I'll also talk about is collaboration. The fourth lever is to have better information about outputs, throughputs, and inputs to increase the ability to monitor and manage research performance. Better information about outputs and outcomes helps universities demonstrate their strengths and thereby helps them improve their ability to compete for funding and talent inputs. On the first lever related to funding, a 1994 group university recently asked us to identify which MRC and BBSR themes its researchers are best positioned to apply to. Using Scopus, we benchmarked the university's performance relative to a comparator set of 9 research-intensive UK universities that together account for almost half of MRC and BBSRC funds awarded. For each theme, we then ranked the 1994 group university against the research-intensive universities. And because the 1994 group university has far fewer researchers than its comparators, it usually ranked 8th, 9th, or 10th in terms of article volume. But for some themes, the publication impact of its articles, measured by citations per article, was ranked significantly higher, in some cases number 1 or number 2. This indicates areas such as BBSRC's themes of food security and bioenergy and industrial biotechnology, where this 1994 group university is especially well positioned to compete for funds. We then showed, and those are the green lines there, we then showed the university the names of the individual researchers which were driving its superior performance so it could follow up with them to agree next steps. A second way in which we can win that universities can win more funds is by using tools such as SciVal Funding, which we recently launched in the UK. It provides daily updates on grants from over 4,000 public and private funding sources and can alert researchers of grants to which they are particularly well qualified to apply. Here you can see results for grants in food security for MRC and BBSRC, outside of MRC and BBSRC grants that the 1994 group I mentioned will be especially well positioned to apply for. On the second lever pertaining to human capital, to help universities attract and retain top research talent, we've also developed another tool, this one called SciVal Strata. For example, here you can see an analysis of energy researchers at a Russell Group university. The pink line shows combined publications per year for a cluster of researchers in energy, while the green, blue, and brown lines show results for individual researchers in the cluster. By comparing publication, citation, and collaboration activity, the Russell Group University can benchmark its performance globally, take actions to retain and promote its own star researchers, such as those shown by the green line, and identify potential candidates to recruit from elsewhere to build its strength in energy further. On the third lever, pertaining to improving the efficiency of the research process, as we've heard, a key mechanism is to improve collaboration. Research shows that international collaboration is associated with much higher publication impact. This chart shows that whether the year is 2000 or it's 2008, articles that have 4 co-authors residing in separate countries are cited around 3 times more than articles with no international co-author. So to facilitate collaboration, another 1994 group university asked us to identify which institutions in India are our researchers working with. And they wanted us to help them identify subject areas where partnership with Indian institutions would help them. This chart shows that the university's level of collaboration with Indian researchers is actually quite low. It's around 20 articles per year were co-authored with Indian researchers in 2010, although the rate is increasing. And this chart shows, I'm sorry, it's a bit dense, it'll test your eyesight, the per subject area, the citation impact of the UK university with the global average and with the Indian Institute of Science in Bangalore, which it had identified as a target partner. So the orange ovals that you see all down the right-hand side show areas like chemical engineering, where the UK university has a higher citation impact than Bangalore, and both have a higher impact than the global average, suggesting that collaboration would be beneficial to both institutions and particularly to Bangalore. In areas like material science, with the green oval, Bangalore has a higher citation score than both the global average and the 1994 group university, suggesting that collaboration in this field would actually be beneficial, but especially for the 1994 group university. The fourth and final lever that I'll talk about pertains to having better information about research inputs, throughputs, and outputs. Because while publications and citations can provide rich insights to inform institutional strategies, UK universities lack consistent, reliable, up-to-date information to manage their research performance. This was a key finding of a JISC-sponsored study that we performed with Imperial College London, in which we interviewed 21 UK universities. Also, one of the Royal Society report's recommendations was better indicators are required in order to properly evaluate global science. To address this need, Elsevier is working on a collaborative, self-funded project with 8 UK universities shown here: Imperial, Cambridge, Leeds, Oxford, St Andrews, Bristol, Queen's University, Belfast, and UCL. And these universities account for almost 40% of funding inputs and article outputs in UK research. The goal is to define a set of metrics across research inputs and throughputs and outputs that can be used to monitor, benchmark, and manage research performance consistently. The project is called Project Snowball because it aims to create a snowball effect in which these institutions form a core that others can bind onto. A progress report will be published openly very shortly, within a matter of a couple of weeks, and the metrics, sources, and citation methodologies will also be made openly available by the end of the year so any university can deploy the same metrics. In summary, the UK is a global research leader, but in the face of increasingly stiff international competition, its leadership position is far from secure. Quality information can help UK universities win more funding, attract great researchers, improve their research efficiency, and inform their strategies to create a virtuous circle in which the ability to demonstrate and showcase quality outputs and outcomes further grows their funding and human capital inputs. There is much that we are doing, but there's much more that we can do. We seek to continue collaborating with universities, with government entities, and with funding bodies to help maximize returns on research investments. Through closer collaboration, we aim to address the complex, global, and interdisciplinary challenges of our time to advance science and improve health for the betterment of society, and to provide the UK with quality information and insights as it works to sustain and advance its leadership position. Thank you.